Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Hello and welcome to the Advice Line on How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz. This is the place where we help try to solve your business challenges. Each week, I'm joined by a legendary founder, a former guest on the show who will help me try to help you. And if you're building something and you need advice, give us a call and you just might be the next guest on the show. Our number is 1-800-433-1298. Send us a one-minute message that tells us about your business and the issues or questions that you'd like help with. You can also send us a voice memo at hibt@id.wondery.com. And make sure to tell us how to reach you. And also, don't forget to sign up for my newsletter. It's full of insights and ideas from the world's greatest entrepreneurs. You can sign up for free at guyraz.com. And we'll put all this info in the podcast description. All right, let's get to it. Joining me this week is Peter Rahal. He's the co-founder of the energy bar brand RX Bar and a new protein bar called David. Peter, it's great to have you back on the show.
Great to be here, Guy. Thanks for having me.
So, of course, you were a guest on the show back in 2018. We did a live taping in Chicago. Super fun.
Yeah.
And if any of you missed that episode, the story of RX Bar, you've got to go back and check it out. It's a great story, and we'll put a link in the episode description. Basically, Peter, you started RX Bar back in 2013 with your friend Jared Smith, and the bars had really simple ingredients, which was dates and nuts and like egg whites. And as the story goes, you sold the brand to Kellogg's in 2017 for over $600 million. It's an amazing story.
Thank you.
But before, Peter, before we get to some of the caller today, I was hoping to ask you just a couple questions about this story. Is it okay?
Yeah, of course.
So, all right. So in 2015, and we talked about this a little bit on the episode, you completely like overhauled the packaging, right? Which was I think it was a game changer. I mean, and a lot of brands kind of have gone on to copy it. And basically you focused on just like four things. It was like four dates, two eggs, six pecans or whatever it was, and no BS. Tell me about the decision to do that and how that actually transformed the product.
Yeah. So we had a marketing problem. We were really successful in our niche, CrossFit gyms. Those were our early adopters, so they totally understood the product. When we began to expand outside of that market into, say, conventional grocery or convenience store, it didn't sell, it didn't work. And, you know, it's a lesson in simplicity. So when you designed the product like ours, you could claim gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free. And so sometimes you kind of think more is the merrier, and like you just want to like lay out all your differentiations and communicate it. And actually, it's confusing.
Right, because on the package, you could have been like paleo friendly, but that doesn't, the people who are paleo knew that. They would know that it was paleo friendly.
Yeah, exactly. And a couple of insights were like in the bar market in general, if you just study and observe the shopper, you'll see they reach out, grab the product and immediately flip it over.
Right.
And so that was the real differentiation. It wasn't how much protein we had. It was that we were clean, minimal ingredient product. And so that's what we led with.
Right.
But we fundamentally knew that like we had a communication problem and we need to really do something more bold to stand out in the competitive market.
Yeah. And it was risky, right? It's not like you and your co-founder sat there and like, we have all this data and we know this is going to work. Like it really was risky. It could have failed.
Yeah. I mean, people thought we were a new company.
When you put them out, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, wait, what happened?
Yeah. It's an amazing story. And really just people who are interested in branding, marketing, and packaging design, this is like a great case study. Peter, your non-compete eventually ended with Kellogg's, and then you became free to re-enter the protein bar space, and you're doing it. I've tried them. They're called David Protein Bars. You launched it, I think, last year, and these are bars high in protein, I think 28 grams of protein, a bunch of different flavors. Tell me about the decision to re-enter the market. Why? I mean, obviously, you've got expertise, but tell me about, you know, starting a brand new bar brand, especially in such a super saturated category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I basically saw a pretty big gap in the market to make sort of the optimal protein bar, which is if you're going to design a protein bar from first principles, you want as much protein as possible with as little everything else.
And I guess the problem, or maybe the opportunity in protein, is a lot of protein bars are just stacked with sugar or carbs.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like protein's pretty, it's like unequivocal, the most important macronutrient. It's not just for bodybuilders anymore. It's for humans. And so it's just a delivery system of protein that tastes delicious.
One of the things that, I mean, obviously this is a different playbook now because you've been through RX Bar and you're better resource now to start David Bar. One of the things that's interesting about it, I think it's only direct to consumer, right? You're not selling in stores mainly.
We're just starting to, but yeah, most predominantly we're direct to consumer and Amazon.
Yeah.
We wanted to start direct to consumer because you can service people directly. You don't have to plan your innovation around a retailer.
Yeah, super interesting. A lot to talk about, and I think probably a lot that will be useful for some of the callers. Why don't we bring in our first caller?
Great, perfect.
Hello and welcome to the Advice Line. You are on with me and Peter Rahal. Please tell us your name, where you're calling from, and a little bit about your business.
Hi, Guy. Hi, Peter. My name is Christy Stewart, and I'm from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And I'm the founder of Inner Wealth Supplements. We are the first supplement line that's dedicated to both alleviating PMS and perimenopause symptoms and increasing lean muscle mass in women.
Well, thank you for calling in and welcome to the show. So, Christy, tell me a little bit about, are these pills? Are they, what's the form of the supplement?
Yeah, so they're powdered supplements. You just put it in your water, shake it up, and drink it.
And tell me a bit about what they are. Like, what do they offer?
Absolutely. So one is a morning, one is an evening.
Yep.
And the morning one has to do with energy and vitality. So it helps provide sustained energy, adrenal support, helps reduce hot flashes and brain fog, increases libido, and helps with bone health. And then the evening formula, it's called Sleep Cycle. So it mm-hmm. contains ingredients that help with your sleep and help bring the ratio of estrogen to progesterone back in context to mm-hmm. reduce the symptoms that women typically get in right. PMS and perimenopause.
Yep. And so these are basically, you're using different formulations of vitamins, minerals, other sort of, right, other ingredients that I'm assuming is a proprietary blend that you came up with?
Absolutely. My background is in molecular biology and biochemistry, and so I came up with the formula. I submitted it to Health Canada. Canada and the U.S. have very different supplement regulations. It's very, yeah. very stringent and strict in Canada. So submitted it to Health Canada, got the approval for the claims I wanted to make, found a manufacturer, and launched in June 2023.
Awesome. How is the business doing so far?
Phenomenal. So in our first full year of sales, we hit $500,000 in sales and wow. just came off an incredible month in January.
And tell me, how are you getting, I mean, where are you selling? This all direct to consumer?
It's all direct to consumer. So I've got my Shopify site like everybody else, and I post on my Instagram. I don't have very many followers, but we've grown through just organic social media and word of mouth, and I haven't invested into advertising at all yet.
Wow. This is a huge and exciting and growing category. I actually led a panel at CES, a Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, for AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons, on this very issue and this very topic and all this cool technology that's being developed around perimenopause, because it is a massive, exploding business opportunity that has basically been ignored.
Well, if you think about it, every single woman on the world, if she lives to a certain age, is going to go through it. And we, as women, you know, all the research is done in men, everything is done in men. And finally, women have just, I don't know what has happened in the zeitgeist, but it's finally come to fruition through some really great, knowledgeable voices on social media. And the reason I got into it was I kind of hit that age. I'm 44. When I hit 40, kind of everything went off the rails. And I used to own a bunch of fitness studios. And so I worked with a lot of clients on nutrition and fitness. And everybody started saying the same thing, that was, you know, I'm eating how I've always eaten. I'm doing all the workouts I've always done, and I'm starting to gain weight. And yeah. realizing that had to do with our hormones. So I dug into the research. I became a certified menopause support practitioner and just realized that by taking in certain vitamins, minerals, micronutrients can have a positive impact on the way your body metabolizes, detoxifies, and excretes your hormones. And if you optimize those functions, all your symptoms go away.
And increasingly, we're hearing that experts around perimenopause, menopause are saying women need to increase their protein intake. So, Peter, we'll get to you on that in a sec. Before we bring Peter and Christy, tell us what your question is for us.
Absolutely. So I think I've reached my ceiling of organic growth, and I'm ready to scale. And for this time period, I believe that online advertising is the best route for me to scale. But if I'm going to scale online, you know, what are the benchmarks? What's an appropriate spend? What is an expectation for ROI? What do you ask agencies? Like, just all kind of the general, you know, I know, Peter, you're advertising online now with your new company. So what is your blueprint?
Yeah, I'll answer your question very directly, how I recommend you think about it. So one, you want to prioritize like high intent channels. So Meta, Google, and Amazon. Those have been the most effective. You can scale in them. And then I would start with those, like a very low budget, maybe like $200 a day, $250 a day. And as you like get some data and figure it out, you can scale, but start super small. You want to keep your acquisition costs below the gross margin per order. So you want to be first order profitable. So make sure your unit economics work. That's what I would recommend. But in general, with anything, I would just stay really close to it. And so you learn.
Christy, are you in the US market yet or just in Canada?
I have literally a handful of clients in the US. I just figured out how to do really cost-effective shipping to the US. So yeah. I'm very ready to enter the market there.
It's a growing, right? There's a lot of, smart entrepreneurs getting into this space.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think one of the advantages you have is the Canadian rules are more stringent, and you know that means something, especially to the kind of consumer that would be interested in this product.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Guy, because absolutely. So before we can sell in Canada, we have to get rigorous third-party testing. Even the claims that we have to say have to be approved by Health Canada, and we have to show science to show that. So I think people can have a really good confidence that when you're buying a supplement from Canada, that if it's making a claim that it's going to do something, it actually will. Otherwise, we're not able to sell in Canada.
Yeah, Peter, you really leaned into a tribe with RX Bar, CrossFitters, but now there's a new kind of tribe, a much bigger tribe, the protein tribe. And it's a growing tribe of people, right? And again, I mean, especially you're talking about women, you know, in their mid-40s and over, both women and men, but particularly talking about women now, we know that there's increasing evidence that they need to be consuming a lot more protein. How would you sort of suggest, Christy, how should she be thinking about getting this out there?
I would say, one, you need to get to the US market at some point. It's just so massive. And then I think if your product's really good, I would just get it into the hands of the right people, and I would start small. So whether that's like mom bloggers, like find niche groups and get your brand and yourself in front of them and get into these communities. And if you have a good product, people will repeat, and then they not only will repeat, they will share about it. So you want like viral word of mouth. That's the best use of time and resources. And then I think like on your product, like the protein thing. So I look at, you know, AG1. Mm-hmm. So what they did was like an all-in-one. So if you have an opportunity to do like an all-in-one with protein,
yeah,
and some of these other benefits, I think that would be a great way, because I think with your consumer, they're like facing a problem. You have the solution. And if you can make it really, really simple, that's like a very valuable thing. Because if I have to take a protein shake and then I have to take your supplement or other things, that's a lot of work. So streamlining into one thing can be a real value unlock that could be valuable.
Yeah. So when you said get it into the mommy bloggers, the influential women, would you recommend that we seed people first, get that buzz going, and then do the advertising? Because you hear stories that people are pumping money into ads with not a great return because I don't have any brand awareness. So it's like a chicken or the egg, right? Do you do the get the brand awareness first through the ads or the influencers?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, my bias is use the product and do it more in an organic way and then relying on an ad. Because, like, one, you're starting a relationship off in a very generous way. You're introducing yourself. They want to see, you know, you have some influence. You know what you're doing. You have credibility. And that's what we did at RX. And that's at David. We're doing it as well. Like, we sample like crazy. It's like trial is so important. That's where I would go versus going straight to advertising yet. And that's the one question I had. You said we've reached our ceiling and I want to go advertising. And like, my first thought was like, how do you know you're at your ceiling? Like, if you're at your ceiling, what would ads do to change that ceiling?
I'm at my ceiling for, I think, my organic reach on social media. But then, as I just said, we had an incredible month in January, like 30% higher than we've ever had. And so that almost defeats that I'm at my ceiling, right? So
yeah. And I would follow that cohort. Like, because if you have product market fit, you know, that they should be sharing it. You should see organic growth come from that. But at a high level, like, I think like product over ads.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Christy Stewart, the brand is called Inner Wealth. Thanks so much. Good luck.
Thank you guys very much. Thanks for having me. And thanks, Peter. Thanks, Guy. Guy, I love how I built this. I've listened to every single episode. I've learned so much. And thank you for everything you do for entrepreneurs.
Thanks so much.
Thank you both. Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is such an exciting category. When I did this panel at the Consumer Electronics Show, I mean, there were like all these entrepreneurs working on technology and products for women going through perimenopause. And it's such a fascinating area because there's so much opportunity.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like the market's being addressed.
It's not. No, not at all. I mean, it's just really starting to explode. It's like where energy bars were in like 2008.
Yeah, she's in a good place.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with another caller and another round of advice. Stay with us. I'm Guy Raz, and you're listening to The Advice Line right here on How I Built This Lab. Welcome back to The Advice Line on How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz, and my guest today is RX Bar co-founder and David Bar founder, Peter Rahal. Peter, let's bring in our next caller. Welcome to The Advice Line. You're on with me and Peter Rahal. Hello, welcome. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and a little bit about your product.
Hey, Guy and Peter. My name's Eric Rokiski, calling in from Los Angeles, California. I'm the founder of Squat Wedgies. We build exercise products that enhance your lower body workout, with our squat wedges and slant boards being our best sellers.
Nice. Welcome to the show, Eric. So the wedge is a wedge that you put under your feet for, I'm assuming, for squats, right?
Yeah. So the most common thing you'll use with a squat wedge or a slant board is to elevate the heel or elevate the whole foot to improve your squatting mechanics, make it easier to squat deeper, opens up those hips and the ankles. But you can also use it to train your calf muscles from a toes elevated position. So your toes go up the ramp instead. There's a lot more uses than just the squats. And that's what we're trying to show people, that they're not just for squatting, because our biggest competition is weight plates right now, because people just elevate their heels.
Oh, on weight plates. I got you. Yeah.
On a weight plate. Yeah. So we're trying to show people that, one, it's way more efficient to use a wedge or a slant board. And you can also do way more other exercises than just squats on them.
Tell me about the story, because this is there are competitors here and we're going to get into that in a sec, but how did you come up with this business idea?
So I've been training for 13 years now. I became a personal trainer at 19 years old, got my degree in exercise science from East Carolina University, did the strength and conditioning coach thing. So I've been well-versed in fitness. And if you've been in fitness for a while, you've known that there are squat wedges in the market. Yeah. But no one was ever really making them affordable. A lot of the products were too expensive, too heavy to move around. So in 2021, we launched a Kickstarter to create the first ever wedgie. And, you know, I figured it was a good time to jump into the market and not just build a product, but build a brand around it and hopefully motivate people to exercise in general.
Awesome. All right. How did you finance this? Oh, you had the Kickstarter, I should say. Right. You mentioned.
So the Kickstarter, we raised about $12,000, $14,000 on the Kickstarter, but I've just been self-financing it myself, using a little bit of debt for growth, not the best strategy.
But, so just using your money as a personal trainer to help finance it.
Yeah, I'm still working. I still train. So I was able to make good amount of money, then save up from there. And I pretty much just put all that into the business to keep our advertising efforts up and finance all those purchase orders and stuff.
All right. So you've got this product, and tell me a little bit about how the business is doing right now.
We've been growing a ton over the last 3 years. So it's been great to see that.
Nice.
So last year we just had our best year to date. We did $700,000 in revenue. Years before that, we did around 345, and then the year before that, we did about 37,000.
What's your margin on 700,000?
So blended, it ends up probably being around like probably 33%. That's my part of my question is today is the, you know, 400,000 that was from Amazon, where our margin's around like 21%, 18 to 22%. And then the rest of that was on Shopify, which is after advertising efforts. That goes down to around like 35 to 45%, just, you know, based on returns and website costs and affiliates and all that stuff.
All right. So not bad. Pretty good, actually. Tell me what your, before we bring Peter in, what's your question for us?
So my question here is, we've grown substantially through Amazon, but I don't love Amazon because I feel like it's limiting me in a way when it comes to talking to my customer and being able to potentially upsell them to our other good products and get them on my YouTube channel to see our free workout programs. But I love Amazon for the ability to drive a ton of revenue, drive growth for the company, and obviously cheaper advertising costs compared to Instagram and Facebook. So my question is, at a certain point, as a growing company, can you step away from Amazon and just focus on your own website so you don't have to compete with others on Amazon with their lower cost options?
Awesome. Okay, well, let me bring Peter Rahal in. Peter, something right up your alley. I know you like to go to the gym. So he's got, he's got Amazon. He's got Shopify.
Yep.
He's trying to figure out, right? Amazon, obviously, great channel because it's Amazon, but the margins are lower. What are your thoughts, Peter?
Yeah. So this is a common issue. We have it at David of how do these channels coexist? How do we optimize them? And Amazon's like a force of nature you can't avoid. So it's not, it should never be a question, are we on Amazon or not? I think it should be, how do we optimize it? And I think you're right. You do want to have a direct website with relationship with your customers and offer different things. So one way to think about it is, all right, Amazon is like for volume, like, right? It's like your hero SKUs there. It's got to be priced right. But like, how do you differentiate and how do you create value on your own website to bring customers there? So that could be through bundling. It could be through promotion. It could be through education. But I would look at it as like a product strategy across the different channels. But I just don't, Amazon's everything. It's such a powerful, powerful e-commerce platform. You want to lean into it and you don't want to run away from it.
Yeah, I guess my question for you, Eric, is why is it one or the other? I mean, Amazon, yeah, I get it. You know, they're squeezing you and, you know, listen, it's a business, but it's also a great channel. On the other hand, I mean, I'm looking at your website here. You've got YouTube channel, you've got all these free exercise routines that you're offering. You've got other products here that you're selling. So I guess my question is, can't you do both?
Yeah, we've been doing both for the last 3 years. It's part of it's come down to being able to keep up with the inventory. Like, you know, on Prime Day, we kind of just ran out of inventory. Yeah. And one of the things has just been like trying to keep up inventory from a financing perspective, because I'm paying for everything up front before it leaves. We do build in China, before it leaves China. And as of right now, we can only order around like 1,000 to 2,000 units at a time. And the lead time on that is about 3 to 4 months from like building it to getting it here. And the issue with Amazon is if you don't have enough inventory, you get charged fees. If you have too much inventory, you get charged fees. And then the return issue as well. And I don't have enough, I think, inventory to potentially do both.
Got it. Yeah, if you have inventory constraints, then you'd want to keep it on the more profitable channel. And Yeah, and just you have to accept that people are going to be searching for your product on Amazon and just going to buy. You're not going to capture those sales. But it sounds like it's more of a cash flow, working capital issue. I would focus on the profitable channel and building your platform. I would spend more of my resources and energy in building Eric as an influential person in fitness and yeah, then you can create all the demand.
Eric, this is a little bit, I mean, going back to this idea of what you are giving your customers or your fans, your potential customers for free. And I know that you're doing these videos. I want to see more of that coming from you, because I think that's when people see you as somebody who's a trusted voice, they're going to want to support your products. I just say this as a focus group of one here, but I do spend money on some of these influencers who I feel are giving me really great free advice, and I have gone and purchased their courses or their products, and they've been really helpful.
I agree with Guy.
Okay, I really appreciate that. And also, Peter, I just want to say, listen to the episode again, and hearing about the dyslexia stuff and some of the speech issues myself, I went to speech therapy for about 6 to 7 years as a kid. So it's pretty cool to see, you know, someone struggle with that as a kid to be so successful as you are now. So I appreciate the inspiration and talking about that.
Thank you. Of course.
Awesome. Eric, thanks so much for calling in. Squat Wedgies is the brand. Good luck, man.
Great to meet you, Eric.
Yeah. Squats are so healthy. It's such a great compound exercise.
Yeah, especially the full range of motion ones. Yeah, I love to squat.
Yeah, and super important. Peter, you will start to discover this as you get closer to 50, that mobility
I know
is so key, man. It is like, it opens everything up. If you're stuck, if you're tight.
I know.
I've spent the last like year and a half just focusing on stretching in addition to the other exercises, and it just completely, it just opens all these doors. It's the best.
I'm not there yet.
Not there yet. You still have some grease in your joints and stuff. Okay. We're going to take another quick break, but we'll be right back with another caller. Stay with us. I'm Guy Raz, and you're listening to The Advice Line right here on How I Built This Lab. Welcome back to The Advice Line on How I Built This Lab. I'm Guy Raz, and today I'm taking your calls with Peter Rahal, the co-founder of RX Bar and founder of David Bars. Peter, let's get back into it and bring in another caller. Please tell us your name, where you're calling from, and a little bit about your business.
Hello, I'm April Wachtel, and I am calling in from Brooklyn, New York, and I'm the founder of Cheeky Cocktails. It's a line of badass cocktail mixers for the home and bar that make labor-intensive cocktails a breeze.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in. Okay, so Cheeky, these are mixers, basically, like you add this to spirits, and then you've got your drink.
Exactly. These are professional grade, so they're shelf-stable versions of what the pros use behind bars.
Got it.
And they're non-alcoholic, so they can be mixed with spirits, non-alc spirits, seltzer, tea, water, etc.
And I'm on your website now. Love the branding.
Yeah.
And so I see espresso syrup, so presumably for like an espresso martini. And
exactly.
You've got some agave syrup, simple syrup, cranberry, lemon juice. So basically, I mean, are you covering the whole gamut of sort of like 50 to 70% of what people order at a bar?
Yeah. So that's part of the problem.
Got it.
It's part of the opportunity and it's part of the problem and part of the question that I have for you, actually.
Okay. We'll get your question in a sec. Tell me a little bit about how this started. How did you start this brand?
Yeah. So my background, I basically grew up in bars and restaurants, and then I worked my way up over many years, came up through bartending, craft cocktail, and then I became a brand ambassador for Bacardi, consultant for Diageo, and a cocktail instructor. So I've taught over 12,000 students how to make cocktails.
Wow. So you come to this with like deep experience.
Yes.
And you decided, when did you decide to start a business?
Yeah. So I started tinkering with the first version in 2014. Mm-hmm. Ran a business for about 4 years, which I would consider to be a worse version of what we do now.
Okay.
So pulled that apart in 2019, put it back together in 2020, and then launched into March of 2020 into the first wave of COVID.
Got it. And now you sell Cheeky Cocktails entirely direct to consumer? online?
No, it's about 25% direct to consumer. We're in 1,300 accounts, primarily brick and mortar across the country, but we're in 4 and 5 star hotels as well.
Nice. And are you mainly in smaller stores or any larger chains?
About half are small independent boutiques, independent liquor, specialty grocers. And then we're in Anthropologie, Nordstrom, Home Goods nice. On the chain side.
Got it. All right. So tell us what your question is for us.
Yeah. So there's a lot of ways that Cheeky is distinct from the competitors.
Okay.
But I struggle to encapsulate all of those ways because we are speaking to trade, we're speaking to consumers, and different people use us for different things. And I don't know if I just need to nail my messaging better mm-hmm. or if this is something that adds complexity and will prevent us from scaling as we try to hit the gas.
What's your messaging now?
Badass cocktail mixers for the home and bar.
Badass cocktail mixers for the home and bar. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't tell me anything.
Right.
Right. So what is it that differentiates it from competitors? I mean, there are other brands out there that are mixer brands. So how do you, when you say it just takes so long to explain it, what is it that's different?
So there's many things. For the professional bartender, there are very specific ratios and recipes that are used when they make ingredients from scratch behind the bar. And commercial options that are shelf-stable on, you know, sold in retail, don't ever say that. We make our syrups to those specs so the professionals know what is in them and how sweet they are. And then the consumer is able to replicate those cocktails with certainty because we make the exact same products as the scratch ingredients.
Got it. All right, Peter, I want to bring you in here. Messaging is her challenge. I don't know if that's the main challenge here, but what do you think? I mean, again, badass cocktail mixers doesn't tell me anything. It's fun, but it doesn't tell me anything.
So like your positioning and communication is a reaction to the competitive landscape. It can never be done in isolation. Yeah, like I think badass cocktails is like a fun thing, but it's not a very telegraphic. It doesn't like really communicate. And one of my sort of like design principles, it's a bit crude, but I think it's a very good approach to packaging design is like the consumers are stupid and lazy. Stupid in the sense that they don't really care that much. The brand is supposed to make it easy for them. And then lazy in the sense they're not going to like look at your package and like read the third point and then flip it over and read the story. So question for you, if you're to boil down the value in a one statement, what is it?
So this is part of where I'm getting hung up. So the packaging itself is really attractive. It's minimalist and it's premium.
It's nice.
And so thank
you. It looks like New York. Art deco-ish, really cool. Love it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So that, I think for the consumer, that is the first thing that catches their attention. It's relative to a very crowded, cluttered marketplace and competitive set. It pops out because there's a lot of white space. Like it's more relaxing to look at our packaging on shelf or if it's in your home bar or in a professional bar. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the ingredients quality is incredibly high and we don't use preservatives. We don't use natural or artificial flavorings. So it's really shelf-stable versions of the ingredients that pros use.
Where do you have the most success, like on-premise or at home?
So our focus this year is the on-premise. So food service for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And is that because you're making the bartender's job so much easier? Is that the value?
I think it's a couple of things. One of which is if it's in a cocktail, yes, but it's if it's in a cocktail on a cocktail menu and it eliminates multiple steps, it improves consistency, you know, all of that fun stuff. Yeah, then it's, of course, easy for them to use.
Yeah, I always say, like, strategy is choosing what not to do.
Yeah.
So one of the, it sounds like your product's kind of working everywhere a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's probably one of those things where, like, if you really were to just focus on where it's the highest demand is, where people are like, oh my God, finally a product like this. Like, where they're not price sensitive, where they forgive you if there's, like, a quality issue, because there's, like, the early adopters are there.
No, you've identified the issue, which is I have been conflicted because it is working everywhere. And so choosing up until this year has been difficult.
You know, I'm looking at, I keep thinking about this, you know, badass cocktail mixers. And I mean, I'm looking at your coffee mixer for the espresso martinis. And I notice in the back, I'm looking at the label here on your site, you're using a very specific kind of premium coffee. You know, you're using really high quality ingredients. I mean, you even name the coffee. It reminds me a lot of the story we did on La Colombe a few years ago. And when they launched back in the day, you know, they were making a very, very premium coffee. And they started by working with really the best restaurants in Philadelphia and New York, because when people tried it, it was different. It tasted better. But I feel like there's a way for you to convey that. You know, people use words like artisanal, which is overused, or, you know, premium. But there's something around that idea that I think can really pop, because the fact that you have sourced the coffee that you're using in your syrup mix is really interesting to me. And I think that would be interesting to a certain set of cocktail enthusiasts.
Yeah, because that's not communicated.
Mm-mm. Yeah, so there's two things. The trade gets it immediately. Like, we do zero explanation with the trade, and immediately they're like, oh my God, I cannot, this is amazing.
Yep.
With consumers, we used to call it bar quality syrups and juices, then we said professional grade syrups and juices. So that was why we adapted it, because the consumer reaction was like another premium product.
Right.
And when we started saying badass, everyone just laughs. And that right. is more in the spirit of the reaction we want to get from people, because it opens people up, and then it's more of a fun conversation versus just kind of groaning and saying, oh, yes, yet another of these.
Cheeky is like English humor, right?
Yes.
So badass is like American.
Yeah.
So I find those two things
are
at odds. Like,
huh. Yeah.
Good
yeah.
brands have great tension, but I don't think those tensions really work. They're more confusing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, really interesting insight. I think that, it's not the answer, but something like, you know, a mixers for cocktail nerds, you know, some way to kind of convey that it's like, you cannot get anything better than this. You know, like if you're into like watches, or you're into pens, right? There are people who are, and there are a lot of people like that. They want the absolute best. And the good news is a lot of people who are really into making the absolute best cocktails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of food for thought. I think because there's a lot of sort of exclusionary behavior associated with the highest quality craft cocktails, I'm trying to share a more approachable version. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing that we've been batting around for a number of years at this point, is like, how can you be super approachable and fun and light and also be very serious about what you do?
But I think one of the other puzzles that's making this difficult is that you're talking to the bartender, like on premise is a very different communication than to the consumer, and you're trying to do right. both.
Right.
And so like one strategy would be like, we're just going to dominate on premise. They get it. We can just yeah. align our communication to prioritize them. Mm-hmm. And then guess what? If you do that really, really well, the word of mouth, they'll see it on premise. Like, oh my God, that cocktail was great. What was it? It's cheeky. So I kind of think you're just diluting yourself across those two different channels. And, you know, it sounds like your DNA is on premise. You know it.
Yeah.
And they get it. So it's like Cholula is a good example. Like Cholula just popped up in every cafe
yeah.
all over America. And then next thing you know, you start to see them in grocery stores. Next thing you know. And so there has been a history of that sort of strategy. So I think this is a strategic question. And then your positioning and messaging should align with that strategy. Mm. And then as you scale, it's a growth area.
Mm-hmm. I think this is so interesting how like that was not my question, but you got to the actual question behind the question.
April, good luck. The brand is called Cheeky Cocktails. Awesome. Congrats on what you built, and we'll be cheering you on.
Thank you. Thank you so much to both of you. This is such an honor, and I'm such a huge fan of the show. So thanks
Great
so much.
Work.
Cheers.
Thank you.
See you.
Yeah, I mean, a product like this is particularly positioned well, because obviously still lots of people drink alcohol, but a lot of people are moving away from it. As you know, Peter, right, in your space, I mean, a lot of people are just not drinking anymore, but they still want to have something. They want to have some kind of cocktail-like drink.
Well, and the thing is, you're seeing on-premise people prioritize non-alc menus because it's a huge revenue grab, basically, because they can like sell, like, you know, without the alcohol and charge $20, $15.
Yeah, mocktails are super expensive. Or a lot of fancy restaurants are doing non-alcoholic pairings where they're making these concoctions, and they're just as – it's still $120 in some of these super high-end restaurants to get a non-alcoholic pairing. Peter, before I let you go, I want to ask you one question that I've been asking people who come on the show, which is, you know, now that you've got a new brand that you're building and you've got a chance to kind of – do things in a different way, right? And not make the same mistakes you made in the first go around. But if you could go back to where you were or in the early days of RX Bar now and say, hey, this is a piece of advice I'm going to give you, what do you think would have been helpful for you to hear?
Yeah. I was full of pride when I first started, meaning I was sensitive to criticisms. I was defensive. I was very proud of my baby. This product is my life. You know, like, oh, they don't, you know, my product's not the problem, you're the problem. Like, and so I would tell myself, like, removing yourself of pride is super important. And instead of like being defensive on criticism, you should actually seek criticism. Mm-hmm. Like, it's about finding what's wrong and fixing it. And so you just being super objective, pragmatic, and not emotional about your product and its position and is really, really prudent to be successful.
It's great advice. That's RX Bar co-founder and David Bar founder, Peter Rahal. Peter, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, guy. That was amazing.
And by the way, if you haven't heard Peter's original How I Built This episode, you've got to go back and check it out. We'll put a link to it in the podcast description. And here's one of my favorite moments from that interview.
You got this idea. You have a plan. Did you think, yeah, let's go raise money?
So that was actually our initial plan. And I remember Jared and I like talking about like, all right, who are we going to raise money from? Like, I remember asking my dad, like, do you know any, you know, rich people I can like, you can connect me with who'd give us some money? And my dad was like, he's old school. It's like super traditional. And he's like, you need to shut the up and sell 1,000 bars.
Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. Please make sure to check out my newsletter. You can sign up for it for free at guyraz.com. Each week, it's packed with tons of insights from entrepreneurs and my own observations and experiences interviewing some of the greatest entrepreneurs ever. And if you're working on a business and you'd like to be on this show, send us a one-minute message that tells us about your business, the issues or questions you'd like help with, and hopefully we can help you with them. And make sure to tell us how to reach you. You can send us a voice memo at hibt@id.wondery.com or call us at 1-800-433-1298 and leave a message there. And we'll put all this in the podcast description as well. This episode was produced by Chris Messini with music composed by Ramtin Arablouei. It was edited by John Isabella and our audio engineer was Sina Lafredo. Our production team also includes Alex Chung, Casey Herman, Iman Ma'ani, Elaine Coates, J.C. Howard, Catherine Seifer, Carrie Thompson, Sam Paulson, and Neva Grant. I'm Guy Raz, and you've been listening to The Advice Line right here on How I Built This Lab. If you like How I Built This, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.